Welcome to another edition of LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. Ray Brewer, Case Kiefer, Ryan Green, the trio from Las Vegas Sun, talking Las Vegas sports right here on KUNV. And Case, Ryan, I do not care what you say. Our intro music is awesome, Case Kiefer. I love it.
Awful. It's got to go.
It does not. And it's just something when you hear that song, you think, yeah, sports, rock and roll.
Wait, hold on. Is it the same? I tuned in late. Was it the same as always?
Oh, yes. Same as always.
The song we picked.
Yeah, we need to change it up. Yeah. You need to get out of the 70s, Brewer.
This is what happened when we picked it. And I know we talk about this every week. Brewer goes, oh, me and Brewer both goes, oh, yeah, we'll have it for about a month or whatever, and then we'll revisit and see what it can be. But we're all busy on Mondays, we never really take the time to say, we got to get this changed until I get here and cringe every time I hear it.
Well, listen.
The decision should belong to Kiefer and I alone.
Are you saying my music taste isn't good? Am I getting a sense from that?
Yes.
Well, listen. We could talk Belle Div DeVoe and That Girl Is Poison all night, but one of my favorite songs. That's it.
Steve, our producer, just informed me that Bane is coming to town, one of my favorite bands of all time.
All right, October. So maybe I should pick the music so we don't get 70s rock
and death metal. Well, Ryan, speaking of good picks, UNLV covered. Not only did they cover, I guess, the shock of all shocks, they didn't beat Hawaii. They dominated Hawaii 40-20 at Sam Boyd Stadium Saturday. This time last week, we're writing their obituary. Now, all of a sudden, I'm thinking maybe the season's not a lost cause, and everybody's optimistic. What happened? Case and I were at the fight.
Well, we had no reason not to be writing their obituary last week, and we have no reason not to be thinking that they can win four or five games right now. It's that's how much changed in the course of a week. Completely unpredictable, completely crazy, but two things, really. Three things. Better pass rush, better coverage in the secondary, and better offensive line play. That contributed to everything. They got the momentum early thanks to a series of Hawaii mistakes. I mean, Hawaii turned the ball over the first time it touched it in each half and just left the back door wide open.
And, Ryan, is it safe to say that maybe Hawaii kind of overlooked UNLV?
I think that's pretty fair. I think you got to really start to wonder how much that – psychological effect plays into it of them being on the mainland for excuse me, basically 2 weeks. They came straight here from Seattle after losing to Washington, stayed in a hotel all week. There's some rumors that the players kind of enjoyed the town a little bit, and there's all kinds of things that could have gone wrong, but I thought it was pretty clear early on that their heads were not in it.
Yeah, LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. Case Kiefer, last week we jokingly said comparing UNLV to Gorman, they looked that bad against Washington State defensively, and now all of a sudden, they're much improved. Thoughts?
Well, Green brought up something I actually wanted to bring up. As soon as the final score was in, I think you were actually still on press row at the Mayweather fight, which we'll get to, we were at. But the word was kind of going around the press room, and like two people were like, oh, well, Hawaii was going out all week. I heard they had a really good time in Vegas. All these people started starting all these rumors. I saw it on Twitter. Then when I get home, and Green just mentioned it. I think that's kind of a and this is taking nothing away from UNLV. They played great, but I just thought it was interesting that was the thing everyone was talking about right at end of the game.
Well, and if you're a Hawaii player, wouldn't you be doing the same thing?
Yeah,
and I would. I'd be. You give me a free week in Vegas, and I'm a 21-year-old kid with a stipend. Absolutely, I'm gonna enjoy myself.
And if I'm not mistaken, the point spread dropped like 3 points right before the game, too, right?
So it was very strange.
So I guess it's possible that someone saw these guys out having a good time, and maybe looked at it as a good spot for UNLV. But I think still, even in their wildest dreams of seeing that, I don't think anyone saw UNLV coming out and winning by what they end up winning by 20.
Yeah, and someone saw them out. Happened to know a certain bettor, who's let's just say his name rhymes with Willie Salters, and that probably, you'd have to think something like that pushed the line down, right? I mean, it went from 21-18 in a matter of about 36 hours.
And I don't care.
And not only that, the money line. Sorry to cut you off, but the money line was I believe UNLV plus 1500 at some shops. As late as Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, and by kickoff, I think it was 700 or 800. It was amazing.
Yeah, still, I don't care if the whole Hawaii team was out at 54, you know, 3 hours before they got on the bus. UNLV lost by 52 points the week prior, and defensively they were awful. I mean, yeah, you're right. Hawaii probably enjoyed the city too much, and Case, sure, you don't want to take anything away from UNLV, but it kind of does sound like, yeah, UNLV won, but Hawaii, instead of saying UNLV won, they were awesome defensively. Tim Cornette is the real deal, baby. 80-yard touchdown. It sounds like everybody is saying Hawaii lost, Ryan. And I'm not one of those guys. I'm a UNLV one guy.
I think there's some of that in there. I think they did lose to a degree. But, you know, look, I think all the credit, you know, obviously to the players get plenty. But I think all the credit has to go to Bobby Houck and his staff, because – those players really, you know, I know it sounds totally cliche, but they really could have just thrown it in after that game the week before. And I think under the previous regime, we saw that happen a few times, and it absolutely did not. I was, you know, I was very surprised with the effort that they put in after just getting a little taste early on of momentum, because I know you guys didn't see the game, but they went 3-and-out on the game's opening drive, and it was ugly. And they punted. Hawaii muffed the punt. And a few plays later, they had a field goal and then one defensive stop, and they were off.
Two things from me. One, I mean, I know I already said this, but if you're known as the UNLV lover, I guess I'm known as the UNLV hater, but I totally don't want to discount UNLV's win. The only reason I bring up the Hawaii stuff is I just think it's a really interesting storyline that you're not going to hear
absolutely
in many other games. And number two, I love how every time we bring out a going out reference or having a good time at a party, Ray Brewer always mentions Studio 54. Can they give him an endorsement deal or something? It's like that's the only spot in town.
No,
or can we get you an updated list of clubs? Because there's plenty of places better.
Listen, it's been a while since I've hit the club scene. I'm about 10 years older than Case, maybe 12, and Green, I got more gray hairs than you'll ever have combined. But just looking at the box score, reading your story, Ryan, on LasVegasSun.com, I just think that, you know, UNLV we thought would be improved in Bobby Houck's second year. Game one, game two, they didn't look that way. But it was against a Wisconsin team that was real good, and then out Washington State, and I had argued that travel had to have been a factor with back-to-back weeks traveling and bus rides and the whole nine yards. Now, all of a sudden, you're at home, you got some momentum, and the improvements that we thought we would see or that we assumed that we would see in year two of any program finally started bursting through. And Ryan, it's reason to be excited, because the easiest game on the schedule is next week against Southern Utah.
Well, yeah, and now you're going to see some comparisons, I think, between how momentum is used under the previous regime and this one. You know, let's think back to Mike Sanford last year in 2009 when they beat Hawaii and get to 2-1. They come off of that really tough Oregon State game that they should have won. They beat Hawaii. They're 2-1. They go to a very winnable game at Wyoming and just completely lay an egg. But now let's fast forward a couple years. You're 1-2. You, like you said, Southern Utah should be your easiest game on the schedule. If you can win this one, as you're supposed to, you get a week off, and then you face a Reno team that's struggling itself in the fifth game. And really, if I mean, there's a lot of possibilities right now. So, you know, how do they handle momentum? How do they handle this little bit of success under the previous regime? They didn't handle it so well. How do they handle it now?
And it's amazing what one win does for the prospects of the program. I mean, last week we'd written them off. Now all of a sudden we're talking about success and momentum and having a winning record and maybe beating Reno since the, you know, the first time since what, 2005 or 6, Ryan?
Mm.
And it's just amazing the turnaround. For you, Green, what was the most impressive part of the win? What just made you say, like, wow, did I just really see this? Or, wow, maybe this isn't a fluke.
Two things. One was the defense overall. The secondary was very sticky. They made plays on the ball when receptions were made. They were making hits. I thought the most impressive player on the defensive side of the ball the entire night was either James Dunlap, the senior defensive end, or Sidney Hodge out of Palo Verde, who's really looking like he's going to be a nice player. The second thing that stood out was I basically spent the last 5 minutes of the game racking my brain wondering where you're going to make Case Keeper take you to for the steak dinner when they go 6-6 in 2 months. I mean, you just have so many options.
I think he already said he wants Casa D'Amore. You know,
you could do better. Come on.
Here's my question. Do you really think their next three games are so winnable? Southern Utah here Saturday. I think it's a W, no doubt about it. At Reno, Reno's not that good this year. UNLV gets 2 weeks to prepare, but it's a road game against a team that has absolutely owned and dominated them. If they get it out of that, then they're at Wyoming, a team that can be beat. There's no way, Ryan. Am I right? There's no way that they could win the next three. Am I right?
No, there's a way, but they're going to have to overcome one major hurdle, and that's winning on the road. I mean, not only have they not won on the road, they've played abysmal on the road in nine efforts under Bobby Houck. You know, when UNLV took a 3-0 lead against Hawaii, that was the first time they had ever scored first in 16 games under Bobby Houck, ever. So, I mean, you gotta crawl before you can walk. So I'm not about to hand them, two road wins, let alone one. But I mean, there's definitely a chance. I'll say that much.
Here's my question. I legitimately don't know the answer. If they do go 6-6, our bet was that they have to make a bowl game. Isn't it possible they could go 6-6 and not get invited to a bowl?
If they go 6-6...
It's very possible because, you look at the Mountain West right now. You've got, obviously, Boise, TCU, and Air Force are all going to be bowl teams. San Diego State is definitely going to be a bowl team. You've got Wyoming's off to a 3-0 start. Colorado State is 2-1. So, I mean, you know, look, if there by some chance is, you know, seven bowl eligible teams in the Mountain West, which I'm not expecting, they could have a tough time convincing somebody to give them a bid, you know, to a bowl game outside of the Mountain West ties. But if they get to 6-6, I think there's about a 90% chance they get in. But listen to us. I mean, after what we were talking about a week ago, we're talking about 6-6 right now.
I know, we're talking bowl talk.
I'm just worried about that dinner, but I feel pretty good for this year. I might be in trouble next year or 2 years from now.
Oh. Well, and now you're looking at it next year. I mean, if you really want to look ahead, you're looking at a team that's going to have a toned down schedule next year, and 18 of the 22 starters are going to be back. So, you know, it's a pretty optimistic time for UNLV's football and its fans. After just a week ago, it appeared pretty dire.
And that just shows, I think, how desperate people are to see a winning football program. Obviously, you know, what, one winning season or three bowl games in the history of the program.
Well,
haven't had a winning season since 2000.
And it was a great – I mean, it just makes you think, because I was there Saturday night and I was on the field as the game ended, and what a great scene. I mean, Bobby Houck and his coaches running around basically hugging everybody they could find. Livengood and Houck exchanging a really nice moment midfield after the game. I mean, it's just really cool moments. And a lot of the fans, you know, there were about 22,000 fans there. I'd say half of them were Hawaii fans, but all the UNLV fans stuck till the end. It was a great scene afterwards, and it just gets you thinking, you know, what could happen if they can get this thing rolling a little bit.
I totally agree with you, and I think the other part that stands out for me, and you know, obviously I wasn't there, but just from the way you described it and in your story on the Sun website, Ryan, is the fact that it wasn't so much just beating Hawaii. It was like, oh, thank God we're not that bad, because it was so bad last week. And there were questions about, you know, did the kids just basically roll over and quit? And to have such a complete 180 in 7 days, I don't think anybody expected it. And I think maybe even some of the coaches were probably a little shocked too, I would think.
Yeah, and you know, it's pretty crazy, because I do think people just wanted to see signs of life. And yeah, I was telling some people today, and I'm sure I was far from alone on this, but UNLV scored to make it 33-14, and they missed a 2-point conversion with about 5 minutes left in the game. They had led the entire game. That was the first time all night where I really believed they were going to win the game, when they went up 19 with 5 minutes left. I mean, that's how shaky of ground they've been on. But boy, what a, you know, now I think I'm interested to see how this team plays with a little confidence. Do they come out and dominate a game that they very well could?
Against Southern Utah. And if they do, then, you know, maybe the ship is heading in the right direction. Well, not the only event in town this past weekend. Case Kiefer and I at the Mayweather fight against Victor Ortiz. We had all the coverage on LasVegasSun.com. And Case, that's the beauty of Mayweather, brother. Anything crazy could happen. And what do you know? Fourth round, Ortiz with a headbutt. They get separated, touch gloves. Before you blink an eye, Ortiz is out unconscious. Some think it's controversial. Some think it's the veteran Mayweather showing his savvy and fighting. What do you think? Break it down.
I think it's a little of both, but mainly on the first one. Look, what Mayweather did, you described it pretty well. Ortiz was going in to apologize for a second time and looking away at the referee because he wasn't sure it was a restart, and Mayweather knocked him out pretty much cold with a hook followed by a right hand, if I remember right. I mean, it was legal. The shot was fine. You can do that. Like Mayweather said, the first rule of boxing is to protect yourself at all times. But at the same time, anyone that argues that it wasn't a cheap shot, I think is totally wrong. It was a totally self-serving move for Floyd Mayweather and terrible for boxing. Everyone ponied up $70 to watch this fight. And it ends with a guy not even being able to fight back. So, I mean, good for him. I think it's bad for everyone else. Maybe not Victor Ortiz because he's going to get a lot of promotion for this. But I think it's just unfortunate it had to end this way. And kind of unfortunate, I thought, Floyd's press conference afterwards was such a joke. He started breaking down in tears, acting like how this was such a huge accomplishment. You hit a guy with his hands down twice. I mean, come on.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, you know, you can tell. If you go on LasVegasSun.com and look at the photo gallery from the fourth round of that fight, Case and I were talking about it today. There's a shot from behind Ortiz where when that right hand of Mayweather's is connecting with him, I mean, his hands are literally dropped dead at his side. And, yeah, I kind of agree with Case. I'm somewhere in the middle between controversial and legal and all, you know, whatever. But, you know, look, this also isn't a bad thing for Ortiz. You know, he could possibly score a rematch out of this. And, you know, I think when it's not like people are going to say, oh, he got knocked out by Floyd Mayweather in the fourth round, he's a fraud, or he's never going to be able to compete at that level. Like Case said, he was at least holding his own. He was landing some shots. You know, maybe it's a good thing for him that this happened, and, you know, the buzz about him is going to stick around.
I would agree. I think the court of public perception thinks that, you know, I don't think anybody would want to pony up 70 again to watch these two go at it again. So I doubt he faces Mayweather again, but I think he could potentially headline a card by himself. And I think he now has cleared that $1 million threshold and demanding that for a fight. So I think everybody feels bad for him. Some feel that he was even in the fight and he was definitely dominating the fourth round, Case. I think for Victor Ortiz, he's the winner, at least morally. I mean, who cares that you lost the belt, and who cares that it was a cheap shot? I think that you've positioned yourself up where you didn't have to beat the guy to win.
But here's the one thing that we absolutely can't overlook that we kind of sounds like we are now. I think what Mayweather did was while not technically illegal, I think it was wrong. But at the same time, Victor Ortiz kind of started the whole thing. I have no idea what he was doing. He lowered his head and just lunged into Mayweather, the most blatant headbutt I've ever seen. So really, I mean, Victor Ortiz kind of brought this on himself by starting it like that. I mean, if he doesn't do that illegal headbutt, which Mayweather said was the second one, I don't know, I didn't see the first one. The referee broke him apart. The referee handled it terribly. So I just want to know, after all this, you were at the press conference, Victor Ortiz calling out Floyd for being a dirty fighter and all this. Victor Ortiz had by far the dirtiest move, the only move in the fight that was illegal with that headbutt.
Yeah, and oftentimes, you know, in boxing or maybe even football or any sport where it's physical, you're going to let your emotions get the best of you out there, and you're not always going to follow the rules of etiquette. I mean, I hate to bring it up, but, you know, Mike Tyson did bite Evander Holyfield's ear. You know, it's just the heat of the moment.
In the same building, right?
In the same building. I mean, things happen that you wouldn't expect to happen, and I don't think Victor Ortiz is a dirty fighter. He apologized. I just think in the heat of the moment that his body overreacted, and that was the end of result of it. I mean, sometimes you can't just control yourself when you're so fired up, Ryan, and out there waiting, you know, ready to rock.
Well, unfortunately for Ortiz, nobody's going to remember who started the whole fiasco. They're just going to remember who ended it and who ended it like an idiot. So, you know, he's probably going to get off the hook on this one.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I never thought about that, but I don't think the general public will really remember that.
I mean, would you guys want to see another Mayweather-Ortiz fight?
I mean, I wouldn't mind it. I would probably be the second behind Pacquiao, but there's no way it's happening. And I would say there's no way it's happening, not because of what you said and people don't want to pony up the money, because I think they would sell some pay-per-views. I think it's not going to happen because Mayweather realized there's absolutely nothing for him to gain in this fight. He has other guys that are waiting in the wings that he can make the exact same amount of money. Why go out there and a guy you knocked out in the record books, why go out there and fight him again? I'd be very surprised if Mayweather grants him a rematch.
I would be surprised, too, just because you're right. Mayweather case has nothing to win. He could likely lose to the guy. I think his legacy in having no losses means a lot more to Mayweather than the money. And that says a lot considering it's money Mayweather and the money team. And I just, you
can
know.
Can we hear, finally stop hearing you say money team?
Well, the fight's over. I mean, listen, it's hilarious. There were all kind of celebrities at the fight on Saturday. And just like, you know, every event. But you go up and just ask some random person or, like, hey, who are you rooting for? And it wouldn't be like Mayweather or Ortiz. It'd be like, oh, I'm on the money team. I'm part of team money.
Yeah, pretty much. But it was a really pro Ortiz crowd though, which I was kind of surprised by.
Yeah.
If you take the whole 12,000, much more people were rooting for Ortiz and kind of went into a frenzy once they played the slow motion replay and saw how it ended.
Yeah, and of course Mayweather left to a course of booze. Before we move on here on LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk, is the only fight you want to see now Mayweather Pacquiao? Do you care that, you know, Pacquiao's got a fight coming up in November, or
no? I don't.
No, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I don't care at all about Pacquiao's fight in November, especially not now that it's on the same night as Cain Velasquez and Junior Dos Santos, the UFC heavyweight title, which I think is a lot more competitive. But anyway, I don't care. Pacquiao's gonna win. I want to see Pacquiao Mayweather. That's all I want to see. And it sounded like Mayweather was already making excuses why it won't happen after the fight. So I'm not expecting it to, but absolutely, that's the only thing I want to see.
Well, you know why it won't happen is because he's going to take some other pushover fight before Pacquiao even fights next.
I can't believe you.
And he'll probably announce it the day of the Pacquiao fight.
You guys are just siding with Pacquiao here. Mayweather just wants an even playing field. That's all he wants.
The image of an idiot.
Ryan, it would be like Floyd, pretty boy Floyd, going and fighting heavyweights. You know, that kind of growth isn't right.
I don't know where you're going with this, but I will say this. I mean, I think of everyone, I've been far from a Floyd hater. I actually defend him for in the ring, except for this thing kind of disgusted me. But if Floyd and Manny ever fight, I'm sticking to my guns. I'll pick Mayweather to win that fight. But
Brewer,
yes,
it's all about perception. Pacquiao is perceived as a good guy because he puts the right image out there. Mayweather's perceived as everything that's wrong with America and an idiot, and that's what he puts out there.
Well, he's
so
a,
that's
he's a little flamboyant.
I am John Q. Casual fan, and John Q. Casual fan is going to side with Pacquiao, I think.
Yeah, let's just say, I mean, Pacquiao would not have. We saw it. I mean, Mosley touched his gloves about a million times. What would have happened if Pacquiao just would have cold decked him there, Mayweather did to Ortiz? I don't think you would ever see Pacquiao. Like, say Pacquiao's in that same situation. Ortiz comes up and is trying to hug him and say sorry. Do you ever see Pacquiao just taking a cheap shot to the chin to end the fight? I really don't think Manny Pacquiao would do that.
He wouldn't.
Well, LasVegasSun.com Sports Talk. Saturday this weekend in Denver, UFC 135. Case Kiefer will be on the scene. Doing the coverage, and I guess the one fight I think a lot of people have been waiting for, John Jones, Rampage Jackson, finally here. A lot of trash talk going on. This is a fight I actually want to see, and I know I don't say that much, Case.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the two main words there, trash talk. I think that this has been probably the best promoted fight of the year so far in the UFC, because these guys have really gone at it. At every opportunity, they've talked a lot of trash. It really seems like Rampage is kind of under John Jones's skin. He accused him of having a spy in his training camp and went through this whole thing. So I think anticipation is really high for this one, and I think it kind of overshadows the fact that John Jones is a justifiably huge favorite because he's John Jones against kind of an aging Rampage Jackson, but should be really interesting, especially with the war of words going on.
Yeah, and John Jones, for me, I've seen him fight in person. He's just so lanky and tall and physical, and I think the height and strength that he has combined makes him so good. I think he's, what, 13-1? And he
really,
looks
really 14-0.
Yeah,
the one is a joke.
Yeah, but looks impressive every time out there. And I know we always talk pound for pound fighters, but Case, this guy's got to be at the top of everybody's list. He's that impressive.
I mean, near the top. I definitely don't think he hasn't done enough yet to be above Anderson Silva or George St. Pierre, but or I would argue Jose Aldo. I would have John Jones 4. Look, I think for John Jones to be considered, you know, the best pound for pound, he's got to beat all these big name light heavyweights now, and that starts with Rampage Jackson, and then after that it's going to be Rashad Evans, his ex-training partner, who's fighting the winner of this, and then he also probably needs to beat Lyoto Machida and Phil Davis. So I think you've got, clearly the guy's 23, he's going to have a chance to fight all these guys. He needs to beat them all in the same manner, you know, GSP and Anderson Silva have done in their divisions, and then he'll be up there.
Well, let me tell you, the biggest joke of Saturday's press conference at the Mayweather fight, those conferences are notorious for letting in a few members of the media and everybody's fans and all the celebrities and your cheering sections. So, Ryan Green, who asked more questions, Case Kiefer and Ray Brewer combined or Tito Ortiz?
Ooh.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Tito Ortiz because that sounds like the right answer.
Yeah, Tito Ortiz and Jenna Jameson make an appearance in the post-fight news conference, and Tito gets a few words and starts off with a compliment and then asks him about, you know, maybe changing his plan of attack. And I don't know. The Pacquiao fight, though, Paris Hilton stood on stage next to Pacquiao. So it's quite the circus, the fight game, right, my friends.
The Tito thing was pretty funny, but I have to disagree with you saying it was the worst thing. The worst thing was the fan getting the mic and getting in an argument with or not getting in an argument. He called Floyd Mayweather a bad word. He said he pulled a blank move and then proceeded to start yelling. I don't think he was asking a question.
You know, they just need to blow up boxing and start again.
Yeah, and then the promoter, Green, the highlight, he gets on the mic and he scolds the people for asking the question and says the questions have to be limited to the media. And Case and I were like, well, why don't you limit the press conference to the media and have everybody
there
else
go.
There you go.
There's the right answer.
LasVegasSun.com. Case, real fast, we got like 30 seconds left. Who's going to win the Jones Rampage fight?
I mean, I think John Jones, and I think everyone would agree. The big question for me is I just want to see how long it goes, because I really think John Jones will probably finish him. I think he'll probably get a TKO. But I'm hoping it's somewhat competitive. I'm hoping it goes, you know, third or fourth round. And hey, here's the thing. Rampage is aging. He's not the guy he used to be, I think, as I said earlier. But he's still got some insane power. So if John Jones leaves himself open, a la Victor Ortiz, although maybe not with his hands at his waist, I mean, Rampage could finish John Jones. It just takes one shot.
LasVegasSun.com sports talk for Case Kiefer. I'm Ray Brewer along with Ryan Green. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to y'all next week.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure. And whatever comes our way. Yeah.